Happy to see everyone. Today is Rosh Chodesh Shvat. We're dealing with the secular calendar, the 3rd of January, 2022. And Baruch Hashem, the rain has... During the night, it rained very hard. I went to shul this morning. There were big puddles. I couldn't believe it. But everyone's hearing me. You can hear me. Vic, you can hear? Good. Okay. First of all, yesterday's shiur, Yomo must have loved the shiur because he put it up within minutes after it was over, and already when I looked at my computer before I go to sleep in the afternoon at 12:45, I couldn't believe already how much response. So I apologize if there are any people who I can't answer in writing. I'll try my best to integrate it into the shiur. But first of all, I want to tell you I'm very proud my memory works. In relation to Rav Lazer Waldman, I'm absolutely right. He was a Torah Vadas product. After he finished high school, he was in Chaim Berlin Yeshiva for a little while, and that's how he got to know Rav Huttner. And then, it was less than a year, and then he went to Kerem Biavna. From Kerem Biavna, he went to Merkaz HaRav. And as they say, the rest is history. So I don't have to correct myself. I have to correct all the newspapers that gave us false information. I don't believe he ever attended Yeshiva University. Could be he took a few courses. How that information went in that he was a graduate is absolutely not so. Regarding baseball, so I have to tell you, I got an interesting email from Rabbi Norman Schloss, who is responsible. Please sit there. Yeah, Mark, that's your seat. Push everything away. Regarding Norman Schloss, who is responsible for seeing that we have kosher Coca-Cola for Pesach, in relation to baseball, he wrote about two stories he knows to be absolutely true that he heard from Rav Chaim Pinchas Scheinberg's brother, Rav Shmuel Scheinberg. One story I knew, another story I didn't know. The story I knew was, and it has many variations, but this is what his brother told him, that his brother arrived to America and Rav Shmuel went to meet him at the airport. I knew both brothers, you have to understand. This is very personal for me. And as they're coming out of the terminal, people are talking about the Dodgers and the Giants. And Rav Pinchas turns to his brother and says, I've been in Israel for over 30 years. Baseball is the furthest thing from my mind. But I see a headline like that, Dodgers be Giants, it gives me a cracks in my heart. That's one story. And that story I knew. And I have a different version, but it's the same story. Ben, I want to talk with you after class for a minute. Is Abigail here?
Couldn't make it today.
Okay, because don't think, I've been thinking all week about
thank
our
so
discussion.
Much.
Watch that, thank me. Okay, the other story is fabulous, that Rav Pinchas Scheinberg is coming back to America, and some of his former students are at the airport to greet him, and standing near, also at the airport, is a typical looking American middle class Jew. And he's in short pants, and he's standing there, and suddenly he sees this crowd jumping around this rabbi, and he goes over to look what's going on, and he starts yelling at the Rosh Yeshiva, lefty, lefty, and they embrace and hug. It turns out that this kid, when the Rosh Yeshiva was a kid, they played stickball on the Lower East Side, and he was known as Lefty. So I have to say I enjoyed that second story immensely. Now, in relation to Rav Aaron Cutler, I want to mention, I stand corrected. It's not that I made a mistake. I placed time together. And I want to thank Rabbi Avi Wilner, who wrote the original piece on Rav Shmaya Shulman, Shmeril Shulman, his recollections of Lakewood. And he speaks about Reb Moshe Eisman understood the Rosh Yeshiva. And I said also, I said, Reb Yankel Schiff, yeah, we're both correct. Rabbi Shulman was talking about the 1940s. He was Talmud in Lakewood in the mid-40s. I was Talmud in the mid-50s. I was there nine years later. In my time, Rabbi Moshe Eisenman was still there. But among the American-born Rabbi Yankel Schiff, I remember I said to everyone, I know two great people in my life, Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein, Rabbi Yankel Schiff, they both, and I reached the conclusion, if you have a big forehead, you're a genius. Because Rabbi Aaron and Rabbi Yankel Schiff both had similar big foreheads. So I reached that conclusion. But I stand corrected, and I happily correct myself. Okay, but I said it's interesting how I merged the two. It didn't dawn upon me that in 44, Rabbi Yankel Schiff was not in Lakewood. He was younger than Rabbi Moshe Eisenman. And I gather I was correct in my memory because Rabbi Wilner doesn't correct me that there were two Rabbi Moshe Eisenmans. Senior was the uncle of Junior. Okay? Check with your brother in Baltimore if he knows Rabbi Moshe Eisenman. And get back to me. There's a reason I'm asking you. See what your brother has to say. Okay. Yesterday, Shir drew forth a tremendous amount of comment, as I said a few minutes ago. And I thank everyone for their kind words. And Devarim Hayotzim in Alev, I'm a Jew. Torah is everything to me. I have no other value in life outside of Torah. So it's, of course, it's Yotzim in Alev. I may have mispronounced the name of the Zilberman family when I spoke about the quintessential Baal Tshuva and how Uri Zohar became frum, and I thought I said it right, but I was crying, so it could be my nephew corrects his uncle that the name is Zilberman, Rabbi Zilberman. I thought I said that. In the Chumash they published, I believe it's Zilberman, S-I-L-B-E-R-M-A-N. It was published in the mid-30s in London. But that's the family. And that's Rabbi Zilberman, and that's the story I told yesterday. Now, let's come back to the Satma Rav, the question of Kasna haunts us. And I'll give you many more sources today. How do you select Jews? And it goes against an open baraita. I quoted to you at the end of the shir. I quoted the Dat Mikra. I trust you looked it up, because basically speaking, in Dat Mikra, you're not going to find a contemporary reference like this. But this reference where he says, how did you give Shimon, and this haunts us throughout the ages, we weren't allowed to give up Jews. So Rabbi Schatz wrote to me that Yosef chose Shimon, etc. All right, you can ask Dat Mikra the question. I'm quoting them. Someone else wrote to me about Rabbi Miller's shir with Chazaka. I said, the question goes to Rabbi Miller. I'm only commenting on when you find a new manuscript. But I want to say, in general, we understood this principle to mean that when someone selects one Jew, everyone else has to say, take us all or take nobody. You have no right to give over a Jew. And this is the way, evidently, Yehuda Kiel understood it. But the question is a haunting question, and it's not a question that you can deal with without deep emotion. And the question becomes more profound, leaving out Kastner and selecting, but you have the case of the Kovna Rav, and I'm only going to touch upon it slightly. I spoke about it for hours many years ago, and I'll give you sources in a minute. But here we are in 1942, and there have the Kovna Ghetto. I probably had relatives who were in the Kovna Ghetto who later were killed. We never heard again from any of our relatives in Europe after World War II. And they come to the Judenrat, and they say to them, give us a list of all the Jews that are too old to work, that are infirm. And if you don't give us the list, we're going to take away, which is a euphemism for killing, but they don't want to say it openly, we're going to take away 10,000 Jews. Give us a list, a few hundred, whatever you have. They came to the Kovner Rebbe. This was the last year of his life. The Kovner Rebbe, Avraham Dovik, Ahana Shapiro, was one of the most fascinating individuals that came out of Volozhin. He was the Gaon Adir, the Devar Avraham. The first volume, they say, was the most insightful volume of Chidushei Torah to come out of Volozhin before Reb Chaim Brisker. He was, again, I've given many lectures on this, but there's Matan Torah. You know, you understand? Matan Torah was Reb Chaim. He recreated the Torah. But before Reb Chaim was the usual derech of learning, the Kovner Rav was a master. He was a very broad-minded individual. And you should know, I have in my files, and Chesky will have trouble believing this, but when I published in Rakhavet Aaron Chelik Aleph, I have biographies I published in Jewish Action, in the Jewish Life, the precursor to Jewish Action. And one of the articles I published on the Kovner Rav, you should know that a letter to the editor came in, written by someone who worked for Feldheim. It was Feldheim, he ran the shop on I think it was East Broadway, if I recall correctly. And he ran the shop, he ran everything, and he wrote in a letter, how do I write about the Kovner Rav? He hated the yeshiva, he didn't understand what the yeshiva are about. Oh, was it a negative letter? And they published it. The letter was actually published in Jewish Life. And I investigated, you know, I was a youngster yet. And the Kovner Rav is very broad. And in that respect, you can understand why he so admired Mori Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik. He's the one who wrote that amazing letter about the Rav, and that's the letter that Rav Moshe Soloveitchik quotes, and he evidently gave the Rav Smicha, and you can see that they had kindred souls. There was a certain broadness that the yeshiva world generally did not have at that time, or does not have at this time either, to a certain degree. And they came to the Kovner Rav, who was ill with cancer. He dies later that year. He's buried. He wasn't killed by the Nazis. And the Kovner Rav faints. Could you imagine with a shaila like that? He says, I've never gotten a shaila like this. Come back tomorrow morning. Let me think about it. And in the morning, he tells them, give them a list, exactly what they want. So I asked the Rav, this is 1983, and I was very involved with the Shurim on the Holocaust and the Kol. Also, I was in Yonah Diyom. I had many questions I asked the Rav in 78. I saw him. Then he was in much better shape, and we spent the whole Shabbat together. We spoke and learning for hours. But in 83 already, that day he was clear. When I came and I never realized how much it meant to him to see, now that I'm even older than the Rav was then, basically, if I'm not mistaken. I think I'm correct. I know how much it means to me. Yesterday, I got an email, and the lady's maiden name was Weissman, Evelyn Weissman Bahar. And I started shaking. Evelyn Weissman, she was in my class. I called her back. I said, you were my student in Mechala. Aren't you related to a very prominent family, the Fink family's Rebbe? She says, what a memory you have. What a memory. What do you mean a memory? I said, dear student. And you're happy. You're happy to see a student who's grown and accomplished. And the Rebbe was clear. And I asked him this shaila. And he said to me, I'm quoting, if not word by word, I'm off by a syllable. He said to me, you can't ask questions about what happened during the Holocaust. These questions you have to answer, you can't think. And he says, I probably would have paskined exactly the same thing. Now, I have to be honest with you. It troubled me. And I went back to Israel, and I found the source. You wouldn't believe it, David. I found the source. I wrote a whole piece justifying the Kovner Rav's decision. Now, am I right or wrong? I don't know. I found the Beit Yaakov. I'll give you where you can check it out if you wish. I found a Tshuvat Beit Yaakov, and I made a distinction between individuals and Klal Yisrael. And I based it upon a tshuva of the Beit Yaakov, who bases it upon Esther Hamalka. How did they allow Esther Hamalka to become a prostitute, to sleep with a non-Jew? All right, this is a bit, the Gemara already asked the question, the Sanhedrin, Esther Kaka Olam Hayata. All right, that a woman in the sexual act can be, she doesn't move, she's not involved in it, she's only, God have mercy, what we spoke about yesterday, she's being seduced, she's being raped, call it what you wish. But nevertheless, a terrible thing to send Esther Hamalka to live with a non-Jew. But this was to save Klal Yisrael. The case under discussion was very sad. It was a group of Jews were traveling, and they were caught up by highwaymen. And the highwaymen saw this pretty woman among them, an Eshetish. And they said, either give us this woman or we kill you all. And they gave the woman. And how do you, and the shayla is if she can go back to her husband, all right? The whole shayla, Kohen, if he's not a Kohen, etc., etc. And how do you surrender the woman? So I based upon, I came up with a tshuva. I have to tell you, Esther Farbstein, Dr. Farbstein, her husband, Rosh Yeshiva in Hebron, she taught my daughters in Chorev. Well, Leah is, you know, again, everything has to be kept quiet, that she has a doctorate. She published a beautiful volume, Mossad Rav Kook, on the Holocaust, and she thanks her professors and guiding her, but never does it say she got a doctorate. It's like I told you, I met the Pnei Menachem, the Gerer Rebbetzin, the husband Gerer Rebbe, and she greets me in the King's English even better than David Katzin's mother can speak. And she was born and raised in London. And she has a doctorate in English literature from Hebrew U, but only the inner circle around the Rebbe knew it. Her niece introduced me, and she whispered in my ear, my aunt has a doctorate. So Esther Farbstein, in her doctorate, takes issue with me. You know, she saw what I published, and she claims that the Kovna Rav didn't know that anyone on the list of being disabled or being old would be sent away right away to the death camps. All right, I don't believe that's possible in 42 that the Kovna Rav did not know. I think it's absolutely impossible. But here you deal with a problem that comes up right now. It's in the news. It haunts us. Just this morning, people were cursing in front of me. The Haredi world has, if you can write about Walda Zal, and someone told me they wrote Zatzal, oh God have mercy. Another, he killed, he not only committed the tzicha on himself, he killed this other woman, plain and simple. The world is shaking. A 24-year-old woman, but the name Brock girl, destroyed her life. It's beyond comprehension to me. A rav, beyond comprehension. So, you know, you can't face the facts. I'll put it that way. So she took issue with me. I have to tell you, in the kollel, the fellas all were upset why I don't answer her. And I told her, look, I've published, I can be right, I can be wrong, but I want her to, I hate to say it, I want her to feel good that she defeated Rakefet. You follow me? It brings me joy. She taught my children, whatever, you know, I'm going to argue with her. Those that are from the Haredi world will believe her. Those from the bigger world and academia will believe me. But nothing's accomplished by answering her. But this question is, look, it's absolutely, just think for a minute the example I gave you last week. You take your class. Again, I'm not talking today. Go back 30, 40 years when I taught Mark, in 50 years when I taught Mark and BMT, when I taught Elliot and BMT. Imagine we all go on a TO and we're captured by the Arabs. And they say, you're the rabbi, select three of your students to be killed or we'll kill you all. You understand this? Is there any answer you can give? It's beyond comprehension. How do you solve it? You know, this came up when the planes were captured and talking about hijacked in 1970. Rabbi Hutner, I had relatives of mine are on the planes. Everyone knows someone has students, relatives of students, students later of mine are on the plane. The planes, there were, I think, three planes that wound up in Jordan. Check it out. And Rabbi Huttner, people critiqued him that he didn't come forward, he didn't play the role of a spiritual leader. And they critiqued him. And in retrospect, you know, I don't know if you have a right to critique him. His feeling probably was, if he plays too big a role, they'll get rid of him very quickly. Or they'll know he's valuable, the price will go up and up. And until today, I read about that incident, and you'll hear people who critique and people who justify. And this is something, God save us, we should never have these questions. But just imagine, you have 30 students, surrender 3, or we kill all 30. How do you deal with it? Imagine you have 30 girls, you've taken 30 young ladies in their late teens or early 20s, a class from Michalar, a class from Machon Gold, surrender 3 girls, or we'll rape all of them. And God have mercy, and I mean what the Rav said to me, God have mercy, that's all I can say. And imagine if you had to give a decision, and the Kavna Rav made the Cheshbon, all right, 100 will die, 200 will die, but 10,000 will be saved. It's okay, now, where is this published? I originally published a historic piece giving the whole history of this question in tradition, and the Divrei Torah I published in Hadarom. You know what Hadarom is? I don't know if it's still published today. Is it still published? Yeah? Okay. Hadarom was a rabbinic journal published by the Rabbinical Council of America. It has all been republished in Rakefet Aaron Chelik 2. Surrendering Jews to the Nazis in the light of Halacha, beginning on page 36. That's the article that deals with it historically. The Halacha, Mesirat Yehudim Lidei Germanim B'Tekufa HaShoah L'Or HaChalacha Hezber L'Psak Shel HaRav Mikovna. That's in Chelek Bet, Volume 2 of Rakofet Aaron. That's the only thing I've ever published. I have a Hebrew section there. A third of the volume is in Hebrew, and including, of course, this, and it begins on page 20. And the issue haunts us. You come now back to what I said about the Belzer Rebbe. So a dear student said, how do you compare the Belzer Rebbe to what happened with Kastner? The Kastner, they claim, Eichmann, he writes to me, Eichmann, I cited Eichmann, we'll cite him again, said that because of Kastner, he could kill the Jews wholesale without any opposition. The Belzer Rebbe and his brother were running away, and what could they do to help save? All right, I just want to mention, it's not yours truly who's making the comparison. I was referring to the fact, and you can go back in time, and I hope one day my shayurim on YU Torah will be indexed. Yomo, do you have any idea how many shayurim I have in YU Torah? I know I have over 1,500. Do you know what the number is today? No. Okay. Anyway, if these shayurim can only be indexed, it would make me a very happy man, because I always get these emails, when did you say this, when did you say that, and we'll go and figure out over the last, we have Sherman there from the early 90s, so it's already 30 years worth of Sheyurim, go and dream. Anyway, when the volume came out in English, it was usually a Hebrew volume, then an English volume, how the Belzer Rebbe was saved, there was a whole critique against the Belzer, the talk they gave in Budapest on their way to freedom, where they tell all the Jews, nothing will happen, Yeshua Hashem keheref ayin, you have to hope and pray and everything will be great and so positive, and why didn't they tell the Jews, run, hide, save? Okay, and they made this comparison to Kastner. I said at the time, if you want my opinion, this critique is absolutely incorrect, and I'll tell you why. Kastner, it's a machloket, no question about it. He had influence. Did he help? Is Eichmann correct? Was Eichmann lying? All right, we'll never know the real truth. These people are not alive anymore. If they'd be alive, then I can tell you the truth. With the Belzer Rebbe, what could they have done? His family was dead. Everyone was dead. He knew that everyone was going to die. What could they have done? And that's what I told you I learned from the Russians in refusal. They lived normally. David's father walked the streets of Moscow. I said, why aren't you afraid? Why? They're living normally. They're learning Gemara. They're trying. And I got an unbelievable answer. If we stop our activities, we put ourselves in jail even before we're really in jail. And what did you want the Belzer Rebbe to do? Jews, lie down, you're going to be killed. Kill yourselves, get rid, don't let them kill you. Don't let them. Yeshua Hashem terrifying, who knows what could happen. And yet, you understand, this is one of our fault lines that they say in Auschwitz, people saw, they heard the shofar of Mashiach Tzidkenu. It's one of our fault lines that we're optimistic, our religion is optimistic, our commitment is optimistic, and basically the optimism works out. But the Gerer Rebbe, I always say, a spiritual leader has to encourage, has to be positive. I'd hate to get up in public and give a talk, you're no good, and this is no good, and that is no good. You have to be positive. And I would not have criticized the Belzer and his brother. At that point, they were running to save their lives, and thank God they saved the Belzer. It recreated the Belzer dynasty. Go and dream that the tens of thousands, if not more, of Belzer Hasidim in Israel, in England, in Belgium. In America, it's a small Hasidus, but across Europe and Israel today, it's one of the major Hasidiyot, and Europe it may be the major one. I think they're bigger than Ger. Ger is big in America, it's not that big in Europe, etc. So I just want to mention, yes, I quoted it, but just to show you that this question will haunt us no matter where we will turn. Now, I just want to pause for a minute. Everyone is here now, and I want to come back to yesterday's shiur. And I was asked a very delicate question, and this comes up time and again. Let me see if I have it in front of me here. The problem is, no, these papers are from here. Here they are. Okay, 1 second. Just give me a second. These papers, okay, this goes here. And this is, later we'll touch upon here. Okay, here's what I wanted. Yeah. The question comes up, and this question has haunted us and has been dealt with both in Israel, both in the United States, particularly in Flatbush. You know, all these stories about people, sexual problems, etc. Where do you draw the line? Lashon Hara, Rechilat, and do you pass the information on? And as I said yesterday, Rav Mordechai Eliyahu wrote a whole article, which it's right in front of me in one of the Alonim this week, one of the fabulous Alonim Be'olam, Olam Katan. And he wrote the article, and he says 10 years ago already there were complaints against Walter and Haredi Rabbonim in his world, and they did nothing. They were afraid of him. I want to tell you that Rabbi Eliyahu, besides being an absolutely truthful person, I admire him, I have confirmation. Last night in shul, Professor Kami Horowitz was there, and we get into a discussion, and Professor Arend, Yitzchak Arend. Again, these are names you may not recognize. This is from a very famous German family. Did you know Moshe Arend, Professor Arend? That's his old, it's his uncle. So Yitzchak Arend he's widowed, and Shabbos he's invited to various people, and he tells me he was invited to this house, and one of the guests was a classmate of Walda in yeshiva, and he said, and he's from the Haredi world, he said 10 years ago there were complaints against him and the rabbis of my world discarded it. So you see, do you complain? But there's another side to the coin. We're living in a world today, me too, right? That's what the movement is called. Does a man get a fair shake? I had a dear friend, my dearest friend, you all know I quote him, Rabbi Dr. Professor Tzvi Grom, Zecher Zichrono Livracha. By the 1990s, Tzvi was afraid when women took his postgraduate classes at Tel Aviv U. He said to me, any woman can go away, she's mad at me, I didn't give her a good grade, I didn't like her paper, she'll go and say, I tried to seduce her, I made an off kindness, I'm captain at Bar Ilan. A guy told the woman she was in sneeristic dress. Ultimately, he had to resign. You have no idea what went on over one comment. And I know the woman, and I know the dress she wore, and I know the guy who made the comment, and he was right. Whether you tell a woman, that's a different story. I would never say anything to a woman. I always, when I taught women, I said that if there's ever a problem, the madrikha has to deal with it, not the Rebbe, not a male figure. But these are real problems. How do you know there's truth? So originally, many rabbanim said, tell a rabbi. Tell me, does a rabbi have the training to deal with a problem like this? I have to say, to the covered of Mishteret Yisrael, you know, we're always quick to complain. The truth of the matter is, most of our complaints, there's no real answer. We're struggling. Corona, everyone says the government should do this, the government should do that. The government, they change their mind every hour. What's going on here? No, you're smarter. I hear the biggest minds, this PhD and that MD and this PhD and this MD, and everyone gives you a different story. It's like a machlokes in halacha. All right, ultimately we reach crystallization. I trust you heard Rakefet Shurim 50 years ago, but can't repeat everything I've taught, David. What can I do? We reach crystallization, hitgapshut, in Ivrit Meduberet. And I have to tell you, Mishteret Yisrael now has, when a person comes with a sexual complaint, they have a special department to handle it, and they have trained people. In the Bnei Brak area, and I would assume also Yerushalayim, there are Haredi women who are police officers trained to deal with these type of questions. So in America already, in Flatbush, one of the big poskim, what's his name, Rav David, give me his last name, Cohn, am I right? Rav David Cohn, already poskins, you go, and oh, they put up pasquiles against them, you go right to the police. They have a special divisions that they already can tell if a person is telling the truth. Not hard to tell. Someone comes late this year. I once said this is one of the classic stories of my life in the 60s. A kid came late this year. And he comes late again. And he comes a third time. Charlie will appreciate the story. So I sent him down to get a, what's going on here? Late. And I was a rough Rebbe. He didn't play games before I came in early on, mellowed on the boat. And what are you doing? The kid comes back with a note, late to shear, a cow on the track stopped the subway train. Signed, George Finkelstein. I have that card until today in my files. George has tried to buy it back to me. He said, I'll give $1,000 to Stucker. Yeah, you're right. I knew right away. You know what happened was simply he's got late pass. Remember, he used to have late pass. George had 10 kids and raised sign, the heck with it, let them in, never looked. No, is he telling me the truth? What do you think, Chesky? Could be in New York today with de Blasio having been mayor. Could be you have cows on the train. I don't know. That could be today. But in the 60s, it could not be. And these women, a girl comes to them, they'll know within a minute whether it's the truth or not. So today, you have to, I don't agree with the psak giving B'nai Brak. First, go to a rabbi, and he has to decide whether you should or shouldn't go further. What does a rabbi know? Pardon me, I'm a rabbi. I've learned Torah day and night for how many years already? Since I was 10, 11? What do I know about this? People can ask me, people want to bother me. I get questions if I would meet with people marriage. I say, it's not I can't. Go to a marriage counselor. What do you want out of me? They want advice. You don't believe the questions I've gotten. I send them to, I have a daughter, all right, you want to know about the birth. Go to my daughter. It's not my field. You have to be honest. I'm not a jack of all trades. You ask me a question in Chumash, I send you to my daughters. Ask me a question in philosophy, my son-in-law. All right, a question in Halacha, I'm willing to deal with. You understand? History, Torah, history, all right. So, Halacha Lamaisa, immediately go to the police. Don't waste a minute. If someone wants to kill you, what are you going to say? If I yell murderer, Lashon Hara, Chas V'Chalila, yell, shout. Do what you can. Someone wronged you like that to your body. And I have to thank Rabbi Grinstein. I have very learned students. Rabbi Grinstein sent me a source from the Pitchei Tshuva, Rechayim Kuf Nun Vav. Quote from, this is not me, this is from the Pitkei Tshuva. We're dealing here with the 19th century. Kol Sifrei HaMusa Marishim Olam Al Oven Lashon Hara. Everyone says it's terrible to speak Lashon Hara. And I say just the opposite. Ani Marish Olam Lehefech Avon Gadom, he said, is the a greater sin than Lashon Hara. And we find it all over. For whom he niyat atzmo mi ledabe b'mokam shenitzrach lahatzil ashuk miyad oshko. To save someone. And I don't speak Lashon Hara. And I tell you again, I told you this, I was guilty. I'm going back now to the early 70s. And this young lady in Machon Gold, I don't want to mention her name, I remember, I can tell you, I can see exactly what she looked like right in front of my Talmida. She came to me with tears in her eyes. A graduate of YU, whom they believe he never went to YU, it's not frum enough. He came on to her. And this girl, a rabbi, a beard, the works, and made a sex comment to a frum young girl who's seeking truth and looks up to Rabbi. I sat with her in the teacher's, a big teacher's room. I sat with her in the corner twice a week for weeks. Gave her strength. Told her Judaism is perfect, Jews are not. The line I published in Washington. And she's Maki Ritovin Tul today. Shvut Ami has gained immensely from her. Her family is married into a very astute family. But I sinned. Why? I didn't go to the dean. I should have gone to the dean and said, Gabi, Scappy Cohn, the dean, this maneuver, either I go or he goes. I can't be on the same faculty with him. But you see, we didn't think like that. This was the big thing with YU, with big scandals. Again, the name is well known, but let me not mention it. I'm related to him through marriage today. And when the children got married, they didn't invite him to the wedding. He's dead already. And the Rav was criticized. Rabbi Lam was criticized. You all know what I'm talking about. And I said, look, you have to understand, in the 80s, the 90s, we just didn't think that way. Chatanu, pashanu. We just didn't think that way. The Rav said, you have to leave the yeshiva. You can't teach boys anymore. All right, he came in Aliyah. He left. No one knew why he left. When I was told the first time the inside story, Malka and I were a star. Can't be. Can't be. We knew him intimately. I don't tell you how bad I... But the Rav, don't criticize. Rabbi Lamb. Why did Rabbi Lamb allow... There was another case with the... took another job. Rabbi Lamb speak out. They wanted to depose him. And they said Rabbi Lamb is not totally with it anymore. Lo aleinu. Rabbi Lamb was a very great individual. Don't minimize. You see how capable his dashanut, his homiletics, his insight, his knowledge, his background. Teira v'das boy. Why you boy? The children he raised. I know the children. That's also a comment on parents, the children they raise. But today... Don't worry about Lashon Hara, Rechila, God forbid, if there's a maneuver among us, yell, shout. And if anyone is wronged, the police have a job to do. In Bnei Brak, I saw pictures of the graduation. It was in the Alonim a few weeks ago, a few months ago already. Kol HaKavod, women from Beis Yaakov, with masters, trained by the police, able to deal with this. God have mercy that this exists. But my wife always says, what are you getting upset about? She quotes me. I always quote, how does the Torah say, lo tietzach, lo tinav, lo tignov? Do I ever think of doing these things? This is what the Torah has to tell us. But you see, she says, it's in the Torah, human beings are human beings, and that's what they do. So, I wanted to digress to answer that question. I've gotten already from people on the screen. I thank you for asking. I've gotten it already in emails. That's my answer. Halacha l'maisa, yell, shout, scream, press the panic button, and I hope the police are equipped. I have a feeling they are today. To go to Rabbanim, have mercy on the Rabbanim. I don't know what's going on. Every shaila, you go to a rabbi. When will he ever open a sefer again? When will he have time to learn? And we're not experts in every field. Halavai should be an expert in Shasim Paiskim. Then I'll be very proud of myself. Okay, now, coming back to this question, there's a lot more to it. He gets to Switzerland. How did he get to Switzerland? There's a question of the Kastner train going to Bergen-Belsen. Until today, we don't know what happened. Endless memoir literature has been written. It has been studied on an academic level. Why was the train sent to Bergen-Belsen? And was Eichmann going back on the deal? Brecher was a small fry. Brecher's role was on the ground. He was the one to take care of everything. But he couldn't really do anything without Eichmann. Was he reneging? And people were frightened stiff. It's going to go on to Auschwitz. They're finished. People got off the list, ran out. Later they died. Others jumped in, was saved. Now, we don't know, but what we do know is Agudat Yisrael in Switzerland played a very big role in putting pressure on the Germans using all their connections. Technically speaking, Switzerland was neutral. There were activists in Switzerland, much has been written at the Sternbuch family, a husband and wife. They say the wife even had more contact than the husband. I've taught members of the family, maybe you've come across Sternbuchs. These were elegant, fabulous people. They missed their own son's bar mitzvah because they had to be elsewhere in dealing with the problems in Bergen-Belsen and trying to get the train out. There was someone named Griffel, someone named Ice. These were all activists for Agudat Yisrael. We can't tell for sure, but there's no question they played a big role in influencing Eichmann, the people under him. More money was paid. They got them to Switzerland. To be honest with you, Agudat Yisrael always bore a grudge against the Satmar Rav. You can understand why. They expected him to come out and become a bit of an Agudist. Don't oppose what Agudah is doing. They felt very bad. It comes up in the memoir literature that he remained the same Satmar Rav with the same opinion, same position, and there was no Karat HaTov, not to the Agudah, not to the Jewish Agency, not to the Zionists. They had people as the Satmar Rav, Met Eich Gratavit, the Ribbono Shel Olam. All right, the Ribbono Shel Olam ultimately does everything. But there were shlichim. This is part of this chapter. Rakefet's viewpoint is very simple. I always look for the special hashgacha that happened. Tell me, had the train gone on to Switzerland like originally planned, which family would not have been saved? The Jungreis family. They were in Bergen-Belsen. Someone working in the office of the Jews that were dealing with Kastner was a relative. Kastner dealing with Brechem. And she insisted and pleaded, put this family on the train. That's how the Jungreises were saved. Okay? Could be. I don't know. Could be I'm reading into it, but these are the facts. Nothing makes sense. We don't know until today what really was in Eichmann's mind. And even if he would say something, can you believe him when he was captured? He had, a role to portray and an image to create. All right. This machloket goes on until this very day. Kislev 21st, this very year. Rabbi Elchanan Pupko, my Talmud from the Kollel, from a very distinguished family. Are you familiar with the Pupko family? That's Chafetz Chaim's so you know the family. His great-grandfather was Chafetz Chaim's nephew. You know my story. I just came to Philadelphia in 1961, my first position, a 23-year-old kid, Cholamoid Sukkos, and I'm listening. I have to teach myself what the Philadelphia is about. I'm listening to the Philadelphia radio. It's a true story. And they interrupt the program. The chief rabbi of Philadelphia has died. And I said, of what? When I got to know Philadelphia, three other great Rabbanim almost had heart failure when they heard that. Rabbi Yalis, Rabbi Novoseller, Rabbi Frankel, who died, Rabbi Pupko. But they said, chief rabbi. But that affected me. You know what happened afterwards? His family contacts me. Rabbi Rotkov, we have a heksher for you, a bakery. And I, Chalosambis. And I asked the Rav, and the Rav said, you can't take it. All you could do is say the ingredients are kosher if you check it, but to give a formal hashgacha. So I call back, I don't want to mention the name, it's from the family. And I say, he says, Vasi Rabbi Rotkov to Wilfenstein Reich? What's with you? You don't want to be rich? That was my introduction to the American rabbinate. God have mercy. So Elchanan Pupko writes a blog. Stop celebrating Rudolf Kastner. Rudolf Kastner saved the lives of more than 1,350 Jews from the Nazis, while others would say he helped facilitate the death of 400,000 Hungarian Jews in exchange for some saving those who could pay their way out. And he, in this blog, criticizes the Satmar Rebbe's followers. In Satmar, the 21st of Kislev is called Chag Hatzalah, the holiday of rescue, celebrating the rescue of the Satmar Rebbe. I do understand that to people whom Kastner saved, he is not evil. I have friends who would be alive and their parents and grandparents who would not be alive, and their parents and grandparents would not be alive had they not been saved by Kastner. Despite all the facts pointing at Kastner's guilt, I understand them. I do not expect them to show hostility to the person who saved them. I do expect them to understand that there are many others who attribute the death of their loved ones to Kastner's collaboration with Adolf Eichmann. And he goes on and on. I would ask members of Satmar not to throw a party, not to celebrate, because it is juxtaposition with the destruction of Hungarian Jewry. And I need not tell you, while Pupko is writing this, here you have in New York thousands upon thousands, a massive celebration, Chaf Aleph Kislev. The mayor-elect Eric Adams attends, introduced at the event by Rabbi Moshe David Niederman. If you recognize the name, he is the public spokesman for Satmar. One of my dearest students works for him, Rabbi David Katz. Clean shaven, Y.U. Musmach, public spokesman, and pictures upon pictures. I just love these pictures. Here is Eric Adams, look at that scarf, standing behind the Satmar Ruv. What a celebration, what happiness. La'yehudim hayta urab simcha. And boy, I apologize to Rabbi Elchanan Pupko. He must be suffering when he sees these pictures. Talmud sent me an article that appeared in Hamodia August 8th, 2007. And it's an article by about one of the people saying by Kastner, living in Israel, a from Jew. I have to tell you, the headline is so misleading that if this is the level of Hamodia, I wouldn't encourage anyone to read it. I, a Kastner child, accuse. So what do you get from that headline? Yomo thinks right away, this child who was saved by Kastner is accusing Kastner of being a murderer. Like Pupko. Chesky, absolutely not. You know what the article is about. Yad Vashem made a big event in memory of the children saved, in honoring Kastner. And all the survivors were invited. Everyone they knew who survived and how to reach them were invited. So among the survivors was this Kastner child, Reb Tzvi Talsky, and he refused to attend the event. David, do you know why he refused to attend the event? Because the chairman of Yad Vashem was Tommy Lapid. Do you remember Tommy Lapid, the fathers before your time? Tommy Lapid, a Hungarian Jew who was saved with miracles, an Einikel from Gedolei Yisrael. his hatred for Yiddishkeit made Avigdor Lieberman look like a tyro, like a sophomore. He held up toilet tissue on Israeli television that it has a hashgacha. Moron, it's not a hashgacha on kashrut. It's a hashgacha that they don't make it on Shabbos because the paper factories have to work 7/24 production. Otherwise, they have to reheat and lose half of Sunday. No, for Shabbos, you lose money. It's not the big deal. But the hashgacha tells you it's a paper factory that observes Shabbos. And he laughed and laughed. His son is, I think his name is Yair Lapid. You know who his son is married to? Lihi. Ben, you know who Lihi is? Yeah, you're lacking in education. The great-granddaughter of Avigdor Amio, who defeated Mori Urebi for the chief rabbinate of Tel Aviv in 1935. This is his great-granddaughter. She's a cousin to endless students that I taught in that family. Kulam Yerein Vishlendam Halavai, she should achieve that level. She participated in a challah ceremony, you know, with the women. This is a big thing today, Baruch Hashem. And Tommy Lapid's widow gave her hell how she did such a primitive act. And Yair said to his mother, why do you criticize my daughter? You paraded me naked when I was 8 days old. This is who may be the next prime minister. This is his concept of a Brit Mila. Shem Yirachem. Okay. That's why he didn't attend. At the end of the article, they ask him, do you feel a sense of gratitude towards Kastner? He saved us. Rashi teaches us that Moshe Rabbeinu did not go out to fight against Midian because he spent time there and felt somewhat beholden to that country. And even though Hashem commanded the Jews to avenge themselves against Midian, Moshe understood that he need not be personally involved in the battle. I don't feel the need to dwell into Kastner's motives. I do know that my group was saved and that I owe him a debt of gratitude. As I wrote, our rescue came about through him. So you see, this argument, this question, it haunts us. There's no black and white. Very difficult. Pro-Kastner, anti-Kastner, Chassidim, Satmar, Chag HaGeula, Chag HaHatzalah, they don't call it Geula because the Chabadnikim call Yud-Tet Kislev Chag HaGeula, so they call it Chag HaHatzalah. No black and white answer, in my humble opinion. I can't curse and I can't bless. I have to be realistic. Ultimately, Kastner saved what amounts today hundreds of thousands of Jews. The Satmaruv alone and his influence, they don't intermarry at least 1%, 2%, not more. There are tragedies in America. You all know some from the finest Satmar families, two girls baptized. God have mercy, it's all on YouTube. And Rakefet said in class, had they been Lubavitch instead of Satmar, they would have had a much better concept of religion because it would have been much more positive with love. And they spoke about the love in this Protestant church. God have mercy. All right, there are. But 98%, hundreds of thousands, remain Jews. And I'll tell you something else, and here I have it in writing. I have a student, Evan Abrahams, and you know, the fact that the Satmarov was on the transport, many Jews, not Satmar, religious, traditional, not so religious, somehow it gave them inspiration. If the Satmar is here, he'll be saved. We have to stick with him. If he'll be saved, we'll be saved. My wife's grandmother remembers the Satmar Rav davening in Bergen-Belsen, and it left a long-lasting impression upon her. She told me about it, and she, of course, was very frum her entire life. Jews believe that if they stick with the Satmar Rav, there will be Yeshua. And I told you, I think last week, remember, with Meir Simcha Feldblum. I met Jews, we lived in the same building, 1695 Grand Avenue was my first apartment when I was married, 1960 to 61 I lived there. And it was owned by Frum people, the building, the Bronx. And later I would interact with that family on a different level, but then I was their tenant. And there were other tenants. And there was a Litvisha family, Rosen. You can find this picture in the Shanghai, in the Mir Yeshiva, in the Beit Aron Beit Medrash. And I said, how do you become a Kloisenberger? And he told me, I saw the Kloisenberger Rebbe in the camps. No one like him. With Professor Feldblum, I asked someone, how did you survive? And they told me, we followed Meir Simcha. He was special. If he would survive, we would survive. The Satmar, here you have living testimony from a grandson. All right, there's a lot more I can give you sources. Articles came out. Pro-Satmar, anti-Satmar. My Talmud, or my Lo Aleinu, my late Talmud, Dr. Norman Gold, got all excited. He was anti-Satmar. And he says in Tablet Magazine, two articles. The first one appeared July 16th, 2014. And let's see if I have the next one appeared July 17th. Oh, one day later, 2014. The Satmar Rebbe and the Destruction of Hungarian Jewry, written by Menachem Karen Kratz. And these two articles give you all the facts, but a tremendous critique of the Satmar Rebbe. Everything we've spoken about, the lack of Hakarat Tov, and they claim wherever he was separated, he was given a little area, he could spend the whole day davening, learning. They prepared special food for him. No, you can look at it positive or look at it negative. You understand? But this was the Satmar. But I want to conclude with one thought. And this is, I think, basic. And yes, when Malkiel Greenwald, and I was aware of all this, you got to remember that all this took place already in the early 50s, mid-50s. I was already a B'nai Akivanik. I subscribed to Ayin Bayin, then Panim El Panim. Did you remember that, Charlie? It's before your time already. So an Israeli magazine, Pinchas Peli, was when I was drafted into the Israeli army. So the final shlav, they interview you, and they give you a test. Because you're an Olech Hadash, they give you a test in Hebrew. Man, I do the test. I never told you the story. And the soldier, the little chayelet, is in a shock. She said, you got a higher mark than any Israeli. Who gets 100? So I told her, give me a T, take D. Me'yoshan yil gil esa chadasra, and you kore yotev rit me'anglit. From the age of 10 or 11, she looked at me, she couldn't understand what I was saying. But you grew up and you came to Israel, you were 31 years old. But the truth was, I subscribed to Ayin Ba'ayin, Panim El Panim. I remember getting it from the mailbox. Oh, I would be excited every year. So I knew what was going on. And after, with Pinchas Pelli, this is how he became famous. He edited it, and then he goes to America, and he gets a doctorate at JTS, and he listens to the Rav Shiurim, and that's when he comes back. He publishes from recordings he had, which really it's not something that was legal at the time, but I know who gave him the recordings, and he publishes Ala Tshuva. And the Rav had a say. I remember the Rav was criticized. Why do you praise him? But the Rav said his translation from Yiddish to Hebrew was superb. Pelli was a master. I knew him quite well. You got that? With that you have to admit. Anyway, let me just end off by saying, it is true. The judge Binyamin Halevi ruled totally against Kastner and in favor of Malkiel Greenwald. When it was appealed to the Supreme Court, the Supreme Court ruled out of the four charges that were made against Kastner, the three most important ones, he was found innocent. The one with Brecha, that he had no right to spare him from being prosecuted after World War II, there he was found guilty. Now, the Supreme Court ruled. You're dealing with the Supreme Court of Israel, which I certainly hope on an issue like this, they are intelligent and learned and knowledgeable and rule correctly. We're not dealing here with a religious issue or an issue dealing with Yehuda Vishomron, where everyone brings its own personal prejudice to the court, which can't be helped. It's the same thing in America, conservative, liberal, progressive, or retrogressive, I should say. I don't have to tell you. We're only human beings. If I'm on the Supreme Court, it has to be influenced by my commitment to the Dvar Hashem, Zu Halacha. But this is a much more paravit issue, a neutral issue. And the Supreme Court ruled in favor of Kastner. So, food for thought. To criticize, okay, you're right. To be Makir Toiva, you have your right. God spare us from such questions. And that's what the Rav said to me. I don't know if I would have ruled any differently. Okay. Adkan. The one question I've never gotten an answer to is why in the biography on Esther Jungreis don't we have mention of Kastner and the train. I've never gotten an answer. Don't understand it. The Jungreis family is not one not to be Makir Toiva. Person writing it, why was it left out? Did he get orders from above? Or was he just too busy and wanted to do the biography and not get involved? Pro and con and cite sources. It's not, art school is not exactly academia, certainly in the world of Torah history. All right, this question hangs fire. If anyone can ever give me an answer, I will appreciate it. Now, the Rebbe is in Switzerland. Not just he's in Switzerland. He's the Satmarov. And the people in Switzerland, the Frum Jews there, and particularly the Belzer Chassidim, because the Belzer had a deep relationship with Satmar, as we saw. They were overjoyed. Had they had their way, they would have been happy if the Rebbe would have remained in Switzerland, not moved on. But the Swiss government, and I wouldn't exactly say they're a philo-Semitic government, to put it mildly, They were unhappy with all these refugees. Yes, they saved their lives. Many of them were pleased to do that. I don't want to not be Makatai. I do want to be Makatai with the Switzerland. They welcomed them. They took them in. A lot happened in Switzerland. Rabbi Wolpe, we spoke about this years ago. Remember, opened institutions for women and saved so many Jewish lives. And Rabbi Schechter, senior Rabbi Heschel Schechter, the women he put on the train. I know women who say our lives were saved by Rabbi Heschel Schechter. They came out of the concentration camps. They didn't want to go further. They lost the zest to live, the will to believe, the will to live. And he pushed them onto the train going to Switzerland, literally pushed them. This is from after World War II, I'm talking about. And today they have grandchildren, great-grandchildren all over the state of Israel, etc. So Switzerland gave the word, they have to get out. These refugees have to move on. The Rebbe had relatives in America, had chassidim in America, but believe it or not, they couldn't come up with a visa. Palestine was a tremendous problem getting a visa. The Jewish agency controlled who could get in. The few visas that the English government agreed to was a few thousand a year. And the Jewish agency controlled it. They were the vehicle by which the visas were distributed. And they were not exactly happy to have from Jews. And again, I want to say to people listening, you should see the emails I get. I'm mad at Israel for what they did to the Sfardim, what they did here, what they built. You're mad at Israel? Be mad at us that we didn't come in Aliyah in the 1880s. You understand me, Ben? We're a democracy. You're mad at me? Who are you mad at? You're mad at Ben? You're mad at Charlie? You're mad at Elliot? Who are you mad at? We should have come in the 1880s. You should see my article. I wish I could give it to you, but once I give it to be published, they have the right to it. I can't give it to anyone else. When it'll be published, I can distribute it to the world. And then the major piece, oh, Baruch Hashem. Amita Shel Torah, in my humble opinion. My Rebbe would kiss me, and as I said yesterday, that's all that matters to me. But coming back here, yeah, the Jewish agency was comprised of 80% of their big shots didn't want religious Jews. It's a new dawn, a new civilization. And it's very simple. You don't have to be a big psychologist to understand why they didn't want religious Jews. They all came from religious homes. Ben-Gurion's parents were Shomer Shabbos, yes or no? Absolutely, 100%. Green, the name was. From people. Chaim Weizmann, where did he come from? And they don't want a guilt conscience. Why do I need a Jew who observes Shabbat, Kashrut, and Alacha, Kama Vakama? They don't want a Gudistim, and certainly they don't want Satma. Now, they were willing. Ultimately, there was pressure, like everyone says, the Satma Rav is the Satma Rav. You don't have to be a Satma Chassid to admire him. Give him a visa. So they wanted him to sign a paper that he would not preach his anti-Zionism as sharply and critically in Palestine. He refused. His daughter and son-in-law, Rosa, and her husband, a Teitelbaum too, a Rav, they signed, and they already were in Jerusalem. More pressure was put on the Israeli and the Jewish agency. There was no Israeli government yet, but it was the Jewish agency. And finally, he gets a visa. He and the Rebbetzin Altafega, they go to Jerusalem to join their daughter and son-in-law. Now, on the volume that I keep on quoting, written by his chassid, but written as with a certain scholarly overtone, he describes the Rebbe's coming, Haifa, thousands, 2,000 people were at the dock to greet the boat. It's exactly where we docked in 1969. I can tell you that 2,000 people did not greet us, but I have to be honest, the Israeli television did greet us because we were the biggest group of Americans, of Anglos, to come to Israel in one shot at that, until that time. We were hundreds and hundreds of people. And I was on television that night. There was primitive television. What was the television? They were interviewing the immigrants as we're coming through. And they interviewed, they grabbed me too, I don't know, it just out of nowhere, I guess a young person with a young family. And I looked, in front of us were tables set up with all the pekidim of the Jewish agency. So I said, and they told me, everyone saw it on television, I said to them that, I look at all that's in front of us and the bureaucracy, I wish Mashiach were here, there'd be no bureaucracy. I'm not certain I'm right, by the way, but they loved the answer. But we went through, the Rebbe was greeted, not only that, they arranged with the railroad a special train would take the Rebbe from Haifa to Yerushalayim, and crowds went everywhere as the train came into Yerushalayim, and it was festive.
What year was that?
Excuse me, 46. 46. It was festive, festive. And the Rebbe went to the Kaisel, and everything was just overwhelming. The Rebbe has arrived, all right, he came in, he immediately started, people want to see him. He took ill, and you know, you overwork yourself, and he's no youngster at this point. You have to know how to work within reason. And he had an infection, they needed penicillin. How do you get penicillin? He's it's Israel, Palestine. Antibiotics, Yekacha Metziot. They come to Dr. Schwartz, who had been the Rebbe's doctor in Switzerland, and within a day or two, the penicillin has arrived. And you should know that this Dr. Schwartz later goes to America. The Rebbe hears he's in Brooklyn, gives him heavy money, sets him up in an office, was makir taiva to him. He was one of the well-known doctors in the Orthodox community. Now, the Rebbetzin immediately gets to work, the endless survivors, endless DPs, and trying to make shidduchim. The Rebbe organizes a Talmud Torah, and he going to run a yeshiva, Yitzhak Leib, and continue. And it peters out. There's no money. All these plans. And the Rebbe and the Rebbetzin go on to America. You read the biography, you'll ask the Hasidim, why did the Rebbe leave Palestine? What was wrong with Jerusalem? Why was it necessary to walk out? And they'll tell you right away, the Rebbe went to America, financial burden. He had every intention of returning to Palestine. His only goal in America was to ease the financial burden the Rebbe had already assumed. He wanted to raise funds, and once they raised the needed funds for Yeshiva Yitav Lev of Yerushalayim and the other causes that the Rebbe was involved with, he had every intention of returning to the Holy Land. This is what every Satmar Chassid will tell you. Okay. The truth may be very different. And here we'll end off the class. I'm going to give you a source soon that is one of a kind. The Satmar Rav comes to Palestine. Palestine at this time has a well-established Eda Haredit. It goes back to Rav Chaim Yosef Zonnenfeld. It goes back to the Yishuv HaYashan. They're established. They're not part of the Jewish agency. They're not part of the chief rabbinate. You know the history, 1920-21, Rav Kook, chief rabbinate, Rav Chaim Yosef Zonnenfeld, Eda Haredit. You know Raketet Zvot by now. It's an amazing thing. Rav Kook, most of his descendants who live in Israel are either Haredim or semi-Haredim, the Kook family. Rav Chaim Yosef Zonnenfeld, 90% of his descendants are religious Zionists. It's an amazing thing. I can give you endless names. Rav Zonnenfeld has thousands of descendants today, and Rav Kook has much less. Some were killed in Hebron, etc. Sad. But they were established. Suddenly the Satmar Rav comes in and he thinks he's going to shake up the world. He's going to bring Satmar from Hungary, Munkacs, to Jerusalem, to Palestine. Oh no. So Charlie, ask a simple question. In America it'll be easier? Absolutely. In America there was nothing yet. Pure chaos. Rabbi Revel, Yeshiva College, there's no Yeshiva University yet. It's not for us. The DPs are pouring in. Breuers, Washington Heights, Lubavitch. What else is there? A little Lakewood, Litvish, plenty of room for Sapta, Munkacs. Okay. Theory. Anyone whose feet walk on the ground will say, Rebbe, you're absolutely right. We understand it. But now, let me give you a source. Fabulous source. When I came in Aliyah many years ago, so I was curious. I would put my nose everywhere. Befriend, I went to see the head of the Eda Haredit, actually, was my chaver from Lakewood. Wow. Went to see people. What's going on? And he asked, why did the Satmar Rav leave? So they told me very simply. And when they told me this, I said, boy, you hit the nail on the head, because I remember this from New York. Satmar Chassidim follow Rabbeinu Tam. If you follow Rabbeinu Tam, my wife, we wanted to call her grandson after Shabbos, find out how everyone feels, because they were sick last week in Haifa. And my wife says, when can I call? I say, we got a problem. I got to check, because this grandson holds Rabbeinu Tam's shita. So I check. The OU today is a sign of the frumkeit that in Torah Tidbits, when I was growing up, there was only one zman given you for Motzai Shabbos. Who were the rabbi? Who held rabbi? All right, David Applebaum, Shem Yikri held more than Rabbeinu Tam. He's a briska Talmud of Rabbaran Soloveitchik. His mother used to say, David makes a Havdalah on Tuesday morning. David, do I miss him? You have no idea. Do I miss him? Deborah should live and be well. So my daughter has coffee with Deborah Reish Chaydash. She was my Talmidah in Michalah, early 70s. Who holds Rabbeinu Tam? Right, but today, everyone holds Chalak, Rabbeinu Tam, Baruch Hashem. It's a great generation. I'm a Litvak. I apologize. I'd be very impressed if everyone was learning Torah day and night. But okay, I got to make my peace with reality. David, if you hold Rabbeinu Tam Shita, when does Shabbos begin for you? Oh my gosh, the Sat Meruv, his chsedim, are smoking cigarettes when everyone else is singing Lechadaldi. And Yerushalayim, they don't tolerate it. In America, they didn't tolerate it. By the time he came to America, he wised up. And there already, they warned him, if you continue with the kula, and not just the chumrah, you want to hold Shabbos an extra 72 minutes, 96, that's your privilege. But not the kula. More or less, I have to say, in Borough Park you'll find Jews smoking when you're running to say Lechuna Rananot. Not exactly. What about in Lakewood? Do you?
No, this point is very strong. They do not allow it.
Right. But here now, Charlie, Rakefet, you don't know everything. How do you come to know so much? Here it is. There's someone who I've never met, but I greatly admire. I've read all his forum. He is Benjamin Brown. Baron, but in English it's Brown. Somehow he has something to do with YU, because his PhD on the Chazon Ish, which is fabulous. It's a 900 plus page volume, Hebrew U, PhD, published by Magnus Press, that's Hebrew U, and Cardoza Law School, YU. So he must have taught in Cardoza. And I've read his other volumes too on the Haredim. I have to tell you what I love about him. He's so knowledgeable, and there's no prejudice. In other words, I have to deal with people every day who hate the Haredim. They'll tell you this fault never. And I say, look, you got to understand them. You know my thought. I don't want to repeat my thinking. He thinks exactly the same way. He is so balanced. He can explain to you every chassidut and every yeshiva. And there's no anti. He is balanced. He himself is, from what I gather, a big religious Zionist. But we have to understand the Torah world. Ribbono shel Olam, you know my vote. Who do I have more in common with? Tommy Lapid or some chassidish Jew in Bnei Brak? It's not a question. Chassidish Jew in Bnei Brak. But the people I deal with, half of them will tell you I have more in common with Tommy Lapid. Doesn't say this, no army, no this, no that. I know with my grandchildren the arguments I have, not arguments, the discussion, the dialogue. And and I can't fault them. These are all kids who served in the army, fought in wars, and they're all from, and they all learn, and they make a living, and they pay taxes, etc. Gentlemen, I'm now quoting to you from Benjamin Baron or Brown, his classic work, Hachazon Ish. And I'm quoting footnote 70 on page 491. And he's dealing with this whole problem of Rabbeinu Tam and Knesset Shabbat. And he says, the Kloisenberger Rebbe and others, all of them accepted the fact that you can be machmir b'yitziyat Shabbat, but you can't be ma'kir b'kinitzat Shabbat. But he says, there was a rumor that I heard from many people when the Satmarov came to Yerushalayim, he was makabel Shabbos Shita Rabbeinu Tam, and the Eda Haredit was hysterical. And the Av Beitin or Rav Pinchas Epstein, the famous Rav Epstein of the Chayyar Eda Haredit based in an Adam Gadol, according to what I was told, warned him that if he doesn't stop, they're going to issue sanctions against him. Well, you know, the works, Paskvilot, etc. And he says, there's no question that this problem for the Satmar played a big role. Bachlatosha la Admur la Komina Aretz la Tzolta Brit. And then he says, and I have to be honest, I have not found the written source for this. It is too sensitive for them to put it into writing. But I do believe it because I heard it from too many people over the decades. Yes, Ben?
My father is a Talmuder of El Meir Bluch.
Tells.
Yeah. He told me that I don't know if he heard of El Meir, whether El Meir came from the Knesset Gedolah or not, that I don't know, but he told me that when he was in Yerushalayim, he advised Talmidim that they should vote in municipal elections. They should not vote in national, but they should vote in municipal. And people from, I don't know if they're from the Edo or just hooligans, came into him and said, if you don't retract your psak, we're going to cause you a physical...
They said that to the Sop.
To the Sop.
Yeah.
And that was another example of something, how it wasn't so pleasant for him here.
You know, it was not pleasant for him, 100%. And he wound up in America, and as we shall see, helped change the American scene. There's no question that in America he found his place, his wife, the Bika Cholim, the Chesed, a lot of positivism. There was negativism, but that's part of Satma. That's part of the picture. Agudat Yisrael never forgave him for many reasons, but I can tell you when I learned in Lakewood, Rav Aaron was quoted as saying he's responsible for Chilul Shabbos in Israel. Because we don't have so many seats in the Knesset, we can't build. Then Chinchat Zmoy was talui on their Begin changed it all, but then it was talui on government chassadim. We don't have the influence, we can't open the schools, and Svad the kids just go off the path. And I know myself, when I came as a tourist in 68, it was the biggest shock for me to see Svadik children, Mechalalei Shabbos. Oh, it hurt. It hurts until today, I told you. When someone turns the motor on, if it's an Ashkenazi mailer, he would be doing that in Frankfurt. But when it's a Svadik kid, did they do that in Gerber? And someone was quoted in the weekend Alonim, that the first time my mother saw a car, they came in Aliyah, I think from Tunisia, and the first time she saw a car being driven by a Jew on Shabbos, she wanted to rip Kriya. And that's where we stand. But remember, we are Israel today. If you could only bring 10,000 people from Lakewood, tell Aaron Cutler, I requested that he come in Aliyah and join us here. Tell him in my name. He won't spit in your face. Take my word for it. Okay. To reiterate, oh, what a wonderful class I have. I apologize to everyone on the screen that I'm not looking at you, but I have so many wonderful people sitting in front of me. Again, I want to mention everyone give their email to Yomo. So if anything happens that they shut down the country, there'll be an email. If I'm not able to teach, I'm not able to teach. I mean, I can't, I'm not old enough. For 2 years ago, I fought my way here, actually, with the police, the army, you don't know what went on. But they were very nice when I told them I have to give a shiur from here and it goes over the world. They actually escorted me from Rehov Shachal to Grus. They would cover it. Oh my, they were good soldiers, covered Hatera. I'm not worthy of such covet, but they displayed it. But give your names to Yomo so that everyone can be reached if need be. So what did we do today? We finished up Kasna. We can't reach a black and white decision. We're not any smarter than Binyamin Halevi and then the Supreme Court. You can check it out with the judges. Well, I think the decision was not unanimous, if I recall. But nevertheless, it was by a majority vote. And you see, as recently as last month, Rabbi Pupko had one opinion, and the Satmar Ruv had a different opinion. Machloikas HaPeskim. We'll leave it at that. With Israel, it's a very fascinating chapter. He was here. There are no two ways about it. There's still old timers who can tell you stories of his brief stopover, we can put it. But the early Shabbos, that's a powerful story. I know in America, in the 50s, they were yelling and shouting at the Hasidim that that how do you test smoke? It's a Shabbos already. And you know, they had a certain gaiva, which we'll talk about yet with Satma, you'll see what I'm referring to, I'll give you sources, had a certain gaiva that the American, who the heck are you? You're a YU graduate, you're a Teva Vadas graduate, you're a nobody. We're from Satma, Munkach, we can do what we want, all right? I hope today, 60, 70 years later, it's not like that. But I know what goes on in Israel. I can't say I'm an expert on what goes on in America. My dear students, on Sunday morning, we'll pick up exactly where we left off. I got a very interesting email on Rav Menashe Klein in relation to the Torah reading, and you'll see a very interesting shaila. And then, Charlie, we go into the big, big leagues. Not the major leagues, major, major leagues. A schnurrer coming around, you're going to require him to show certification that he's honest. Got it? In this Israel created, all these people leave Israel. It's also why people are mad at the Haredi world. That, but there's only a minority. And I have incidents. Do I get angry? Someone schnurring in Kew Garden Hills. This one is that. I say, what are you schnurring money for? You live in Israel. You don't have Bituach Lumi. You don't have Kupat Cholim. Every citizen has it. It's paid for. He ran away from me so quickly as if I cursed him with every curse word in the Russian language. Gentlemen, are there any questions? Until we meet again in health and happiness, Das V'Danya, Mark, open it to the world. We got to finish up. Rabbi Bednash is coming in shortly. Any questions? A big crowd is listening. Wow, I don't even know some of the people. Okay. Can they speak?
Yeah.
Are there any questions? Can you speak? Any Mark?
I saw something very interesting in Google. They have different sources about Kastner, and one of the people wrote in that it's like a Rorschach test. It tells you more about the person than it tells about the cards themselves. Because everyone puts in their own prejudices and how they see Kastner. Those of us who admire the fact that he was able to get 1,600 people out, that's like Schindler. Didn't Schindler have dealings with the Germans all the way through?
Right.
So look at the positive. He saved 1,600 Jews and all their children and grandchildren, who knows how many thousands.
Right.
On the other side, we have the other side. Right. There's no doubt about that, the other side. But what should he do? And those that he took money from, they paid for those who couldn't pay for the trip.
Right.
Eichmann wanted $1,500 per person.
Right. I have to tell you, the criticism when we talk about Kastner, and it's not a criticism of Schindler, is that Kastner didn't reveal to the Jews what the Nazis really wanted to do. He helped create a feeling of it's not going to be that terrible, it's not going to be that bad. I don't know whether it's true or not, I don't know what he knew, but that's the criticism. Schindler, no matter what you want to say, he saved Jews. He double-talked the Nazis. Yes, they're working, they're not working. Schindler, you cannot criticize. When we come to Kastner, you open up a beehive. And all right, but I agree with you. It also reflects on the person if you're positive or negative. Absolutely. Same thing with Russia, as I said. I was criticized. Why did you select to work to get SS out? You met so many refuseniks. Yeah, but you can't do it for everyone. If you can save one, you can save. If you try to save 100, you're going to save no one. All right, these are dinei nefashot. As the Reb said, I don't know if I would have acted any differently. Okay. Thank you, Yitzchak. Thank you, Rabbi Rubin. Yeah. Any more questions? You can see Mark. Everyone sees Mark. That's Rabbi Dr. Lieutenant Colonel Mark Wiener. And Mark in shul this morning, there was a Lieutenant Colonel davening right next to me. I think he's a judge, and he had to get to where he had to go, to the Army Military Court, quite early, so he davened early. We had a very big minyan this morning. You couldn't believe that at such an early time, so many Jews are going to show up in shul. My dear students, I want to thank you very much for your participation, both those on screen and both those in front of me, until we meet again in health and happiness. And to Chaim Maltz, a big mazel tov on the Simcha and his family, until we meet again in health and happiness. Das Vedanya.